listening to CKLN's Rude Awakening here on CKLN 88.1 FM, CKLN.FM online, and Rogers Cable Box 947. Hopefully you enjoyed your 4 hours of sweet, sweet jive-loving vibes from the CKLN's First Ladies of Reggae. Brilliantly spinning stuff that'll keep us warm here in the cold, cold winter here in TDOT, here in Toronto, Canada, where we are broadcasting out of. Today's show, I have a bunch of clips I wanted to play here. Apologize. It happens every Monday morning, so I didn't bring in this jazz CD to try and see if I could coax out any classic, funky, you know, mind-expanding vibes. Here this morning, this is a collection from the Birth Collection, which I like. This helps your mind go in a million different directions, and you gotta wonder. The fact that jazz is played a lot here on the radio, independent radio here at CKLN. Just might mean it's something that people independently like and independently want to support. And the reasons why it's not promoted so much in our commercial culture are things to question. But regardless of all that, I want to talk about a couple of things that I was going to deal with on today's show. There's an episode of the Corbett Report. You go to Corbett, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com. Just Google the Corbett Report. James Corbett is an expat Canadian living in Japan who breaks down the New World Order quite brilliantly. And he has a recent episode. His most recent episode is called How to Talk to People. And you got to wonder. You know, he tries it himself in the same way I try not to be insulting when I offer that out there. But it's true. You know, how to talk to people is the name of the game, because ultimately, you know, people like myself as your host, BK, a.k.a. BJ, here on Mondays and Thursdays on CKLN Radio of Rude Awakening, like to point out, regardless of how entertaining we are at any given time, the most important thing for any of us to do is to pass on information or ways of explaining and sharing information that you will pass on out there as part of a listening audience. If all you do is get entertained by this and judge people on how entertaining they are, then you're not looking at this the right way. We are in an info war against the forces of globalization. That is right. International, multinational corporations working at the behest of big banks, working at the behest of a handful of colonial, mostly royal, and other assorted top families, elite families, are essentially centralizing power and control over the whole world. And so, you'll have an episode of the Corbett Report where he goes through a bunch of different approaches from 9/11 whistleblower Andrew Grove, from journalist Maria Heller, from activist Charlie Beach of the Love Police out of England, trying to talk to people, trying to communicate this message so that you can study that technique. And so there was a little example I was going to play on the show this morning. But the most important thing is to figure that out. How do you talk to people here? Because keep in mind that just learning about this stuff is part of getting us used to where it's going. You know, I was listening to the Joe Rogan podcast at joerogan.net on the way up here, former host of Fear Factor, UFC commentator, stand-up comedian, actor, just basically, you know, Joe Average and a nice dude, the kind of dude you want to party with and hang out with. And his view of the world and his podcast is the common view, engineered by the promotion of the new age and general concepts of karma that have been, you know, foisted on us for the last 100-plus years by purportedly groups working for Freemasonry, the Eastern Star Freemasons, Madame Elena Blavatsky back in the 1800s or 1880s, wrote about this extensively. But the promotion of the New Age is essentially to get us to think that everything is happening the way it's supposed to happen. You know, it's all natural and it's all meant to be, as opposed to ideas are promoted by certain groups that have more to gain from them. You know, we all of us understand that on a micro level. You know, we understand the concept of advertising and marketing and so on. We don't really understand, at least most of us yet, the concept of social engineering. And so I like to break that down here on the show. And on the Joe Rogan podcast, I was listening to him talk about technology with a video game developer that he had on, along with his usual co-host there. You can go to joerogan.net, joerogan.net to check out some of the musings on the show, which I do like. I do like the podcast, but I do, and Joe Rogan knows Alex Jones and believes he's probably right about stuff and does allude to, you know, a lot of things that, suggest that there is corruption and bigger and more powerful forces out there that are dictating, major events in history. So he alludes to that, but there's also this assumption when it comes to technology that it's just going so fast on its own. You know, technology is just doing what it does, and we're going to have to deal with the ramifications of that. Well, through this podcast, the one of the co-hosts there, Brian Redban, makes the point that it sounds like we're probably going to be spending a lot of time in Matrix-like pods in the future at the rate this is going, with the introduction of HD TVs to now 3D TVs and 3D movies, 3D video games, and eventually a total immersion in a world for hours, days, or perhaps even entire lifetimes. Or, as has been posited in certain elite circles, according to people like Alan Watt from CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com, they're going to try and sell us the brain chip, and it'll be something out of the movie A Scanner Darkly, with Keanu Reeves and Robert Downey Jr. and Winona Ryder, from a couple of years ago, a semi-animated film by the same director, Richard Linklater, who made Waking Life. And that is where you'll get a chip in your head that'll make you think you're somewhere else, think you're in a fantasy, think you're playing World of Warcraft, all while your body is sort of robotically doing the things it's trained to do as a servant of the elite. And so that's an idea that's been posited. And I even saw the movie Avatar on Friday, the new three-hour director's cut version of Avatar. And I liked it. It was a little simple. I thought it kind of, from a story perspective, fell apart a little bit about halfway through it, where it just got really, really simple, and you had these highly evolved, intelligent beings just sort of standing there and getting mowed down by evil soldiers, who are mining unobtainium, just a goofy name, unobtainium on a far-off alien planet from a peaceful, tall, blue-skinned race. Sort of an allegory of Western imperialism, attacking the third world, played out in a really amazing $250 million fantasy universe they created there. And people often left Avatar, from what I've heard, very, very depressed, because that world was so special, a world of glowing flora and fauna and a simple life sort of running through the woods and merging with flying animals who become your pets for life and all sorts of amazing, incredible things there. And then, of course, the evil U.S. military working for corporations trying to mine the resources of that peaceful people who were so in tune with nature. And so this is something that we've got to sort of see happening and understand, because otherwise, like everything else, and thanks to the 100-plus years of New Age indoctrination, we'll think that it's all happening naturally, or we'll think that that we deserved it somehow, karmically. Or we'll think, everything happens for a reason. There's all these sayings out there that get us to normalize just about anything without looking for another explanation. And so all that makes it difficult to talk to people, because people are so wedded to those ideas, after being promoted for generations now. People are wedded to those ideas. And so on the Corbett Report, talk a little bit about that. And 9/11 whistleblower Richard Andrew Grove made a fabulous point, where he said so many people have so much vested in defending things they know so little about. When it comes to the military or intelligence or big pharmaceuticals, big pharmaceutical companies and the medical industry. People will say, you have to take vaccines, otherwise the kid might get sick. And so, people end up giving the kid drugs when, the kid isn't even sick yet. People say you have to finish taking medication if you start. if you're taking antibiotics or something like that and it doesn't work, then, you know, to avoid those antibodies not working in the future on any future illnesses, you've got to finish your antibiotic dose. And yet, I talked with Dr. Andrew Molden. I worked for him. I campaigned for much of his MP campaign in North Bay in 2008 when he was running for member of parliament, and had a reasonably successful run. He didn't end up winning. But the point is, you know, as he told me, the doc from what he understands himself as a medical doctor, and from talking to other medical doctors who've looked into this, the one size fits all approach to medicine doesn't work. So, you know, me being, you know, a 5'10, 160 in the winter, 170 pound dude, and being prescribed, you know, 25 pills over the next 2 weeks, you know, I have a much different body and much different ability to absorb this type of medication than does a 5 foot tall, 95 pound girl, you know. And so, and yet they still prescribe doses for adults and doses for children without taking into account any of the other factors with respect to how your body can handle the drugs that are proscribed or prescribed. And yet people will defend these things, and they'll defend things that are in their absolute worst interests. And that brings me to another clip that I was planning on playing today from Dr. Mercola. You don't know Dr. Mercola, amazing website. He's a specialist on exposing the fraud in the medical industry and the fraud of Big Pharmacide and promoting healthier living through better eating. And amazing the number of hazards out there that were discussed by Dr. Mercola on the Alex Jones Show just last week. And this gets to people defending things that they know nothing about. And as part of our new age, you know, I just want to believe what I want to believe. You know, keep it happy. You know, everything will work out. You know, think positive thoughts. Don't just go, wait a minute. Just based on what we know, there's got to be some really crazy people in the world. You know, just allowing this stuff to go on or saying, you know, more studies are needed, you know, or saying they'll take years to study this. And instead of erring on the side of an individual's health, they err on the side of corporate profits. You know, we know enough now to say, you know, wait a minute. There's clearly bad people here we have to deal with. What are we going to do about that? But instead, many of us will sort of hope for the best. And even in terms of the people out there, in terms of how to talk about this, many people will say, you know, oh, you do what you can, and you hope people wake up, and so on and so forth. But that doesn't take the problem itself of, you know, globalization seriously, and the speed at which they're moving, and the pace at which life in general is increasing in terms of the information we're taking in, the changes to our culture, and how off balance it throws us. So to have an unbalanced reaction of, well, I hope things work out for the best, or, you know, what are you going to do? Or, well, you do the best you can, you know, oh, it's a shame, you know, more people aren't waking up, or lots of people are waking up, and I'm hoping that that's going to be enough. Taking a more empowering approach to this sort of thing is going to be the key to many people mentally making it out of it. And the proof of that is in the people who do. You just listened to Webster Tarpley the other day. He's a guy who's, you know, 70, 75 years old, and sharp as a whip, has his own weekly podcast at tarpley.net, tarpley.net. And he's an expert historian and economics expert. And he's got a simple 4 or 5 point plan to stop the depression dead in its tracks. And it's the type of thing which, if people got behind it, then it would be a no-brainer. It would just be, instead of bailouts to banks, use those bailouts to bail out homeowners. And then, you know, once you have that, that people have extra money to spend that's not being spent on their fraudulent mortgages, which you still have to pay off, folks, understand. But understand it's based on fraud in the bigger picture. It's best to take care of that as well before that fact ends up catching up with us. And to start a lot of local manufacturing, rebuilding infrastructure, rebuilding roads, building more hospitals, building, you know, maglev trains, There's lots of ways that we can increase production here. There's lots of ways that we can use the concept of money to stimulate our economies here in Canada, in America, in Europe, around the world. And these are things that he keeps pushing for as solutions. And sometimes I catch him on the Alex Jones show, and even Jones will interrupt him for a sec, just like he does with Max Kaiser and others, and say, well, look, you know, solutions are great, but even so, the scale of the size of the problem is so crazy. And so, you know, and Tarpley will just say, yeah, but what are you going to do, right? And you'll find that people, as they get older, you know, as they sort of come to grips with the size of the problem and the fact that, yes, there are, you know, competing oligarchs that run the world and that do their best to, you know, control and enslave populations and try to manage us like a herd. And that now it appears that their plans don't include much in our future worth celebrating. We have to do something about it. They're all focused on solutions. And everybody I know who's focused on solutions and who's actually putting something out there that they think will be valuable feels better about the whole situation and feels better about themselves. So I do strongly recommend that out there to you folks listening to CKL and Rood Awakening this morning, because we are being disempowered. The reason that there aren't arguments all over the place about what to do about this, not about what's happening and, oh, is it the Masons or the Zionists or the Lizards or the Rothschilds or the Queen or the whoever, or not just entreaties about how bad aspartame is, and you hear fluoride is bad, and you hear, you know, fluoride in green tea, it makes green tea even worse, you know, and so on and so forth. You go on and on and on about that stuff. But the reason we don't see more arguments about what to do about this, should we poster, should we flyer, should we aim for 10% of a population in, say, Scarborough, and let everybody know, look, we're trying to hit, you know, 50,000 people out of 500,000. That's what our, you know, $100 budget was for this project. And so we got a bunch of flyers, we got a bunch of people, and we're trying to get that 10% reached so they could tell everybody else. So out of that mix, we could have 1% of people consistently organizing locally where you live. Is that something feasible? You know, what's the best way to do that? Is that an idea worth exploring in conversation for a few minutes until we can more authoritatively decide to pursue it or discard it? You know, what would we say to people? How would we get that message across that we're trying to reach a percentage of you? You need to tell everybody else, just so we can find the 1% of people who will take consistent action, you know, on behalf of you, your families, your friends, your property values, your financial future, your hopes and dreams here in this country. And the reason that we aren't arguing, you know, more about that is because we have been domesticated by our culture. And Bertrand Russell once said it would be as difficult for humans to rebel as the idea of sheep rebelling against the practice of eating mutton. And that's why we aren't arguing about this. And that, frankly, drives me absolutely nuts. Because we have a million ideas. Should we burn DVDs? What's the best way to target this? Is immigrant population? Should we go for the values and how they're being destroyed? Should we go for education? Where do people love their kids? Where do people love their toys? Where do people worry about their money? Where do people worry about sex, love, relationships? You know, how do we put out certain messages that resonate with certain communities and then target those communities and then explain to those communities that we're just trying to talk to them? We're trying to speak in both a language in terms of English and a colloquial language in terms of Toronto. We're just trying to communicate with you some information that we think would be helpful in terms of helping you understand the world, and we hope you pass it on. And in terms of, you know, trying to scrape out the handful of people that are not like sheep who are trying to rebel against the practice of eating mutton, that won't just say, oh, you know, what can you do, or, you know, I try and do the best I can, or, you know, I learn a lot about this stuff. But people who actually say, look, let's sit down, with other people where we live and talk about how to fight the info war. I'll give you an example. Four tablespoons of this brain food may prevent Alzheimer's. It says here, from Dr. Mercola, from Mercola.com, M-E-R-C-O-L-A.com. In the video above, Dr. Mary Newport discusses ketone bodies, an alternative fuel for your brain, which your body makes when digesting coconut oil, and how coconut oil may offer profound benefits in the fight against Alzheimer's disease. This is truly remarkable news, and I urge you to watch Dr. Newport's video in its entirety to get her full story. If her theory is accurate, this could be one of the greatest natural health discoveries in a long time. Backing up her claims is the remarkable discovery of her own husband. Bear in mind, however, that contrary to Dr. Newport, I personally do not support using drugs to treat Alzheimer's, and based on his condition belief, enrolling him in a vaccine study is completely contradicted and contraindicated and ill-advised. That said, I believe Dr. Newport may have stumbled upon a powerful natural strategy to help prevent and treat Alzheimer's, and that's what I want to address here. So essentially, Dr. Mercola's endorsing the work of another doctor, Dr. Mary Newport, except with a couple of caveats, because Dr. Newport apparently still believes in the value of vaccines and big pharmacide drugs. But what is the point of me sharing this to you? Well, if you don't want to die broke while your parents are going crazy, then the best thing to do is to fight the New World Order. And part of that is, of course, exposing the political system, the economic system, and all the other sort of systems out there for the corruption that threatens us. And then part of it is sharing helpful information, like, you know, hey, mom, dad, hey, other people out there with moms and dads, apparently this simple act of buying and eating more coconut or coconut oil can help prevent Alzheimer's. And the health risks when compared to big pharmacide drugs are negligible, because eating coconut, you might gain a little weight at most, that's about it, whereas the potential health benefits are massive. So we have a population here of 5.5 million in Toronto, and when people have parallel situations worldwide, how do you get people to use information like this to get back to caring about people the way we used to, or the way we should have if we didn't used to? And it says here, brain starvation is a hallmark of Alzheimer's disease. One of the primary fuels your brain needs is glucose, which is converted into energy. The mechanism for glucose uptake in your brain has only recently begun to be studied. And what's been learned is that your brain actually manufactures its own insulin to convert glucose in your bloodstream into the food it needs to survive. As you may know already, diabetes is a condition where your body's response to insulin is weakened until your body eventually stops producing the insulin necessary to regulate blood sugar, and your body's ability to regulate or process blood sugar into energy becomes essentially broken. And so this is often what happens to Alzheimer's patients. When your brain's production of insulin decreases, your brain literally begins to starve as it's deprived of the glucose-converted energy it needs to function normally. It is now known that diabetics have a 65% increased risk of also being diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, and there appears to be a potent link between the two diseases, even though the exact mechanisms have yet to be determined. It seems quite clear, however, that both are related to insulin resistance in your body and your brain. Now, stop and think about this for a second, because I had a clip from Gary Fielder, a lawyer who's fighting the TSA U.S. airport naked body scanners and aggressive groping going on in the States. As a lawyer, filed a couple of successful lawsuits to stop them from body scanning kids under 18. Amazing stuff, because it was violating child pornography laws. But one of the points that he was making in the naked body scanner fight is, he was saying, where are all the groups that say they fight for people's rights? You know, where's the ACLU? Where's Mothers Against Drunk Driving, who supposedly cares so much about children? Where's, you know, the NAACP, who supposedly cares about black Americans? Where are all the other groups who supposedly care about all the other colors of Americans? And here in Canada, of Canadians. Where are the groups that demand money and raise money for research into diabetes, how come they're not promoting these natural cures, and how come they're not promoting the link between diabetes and Alzheimer's and how to break that link? Is there a way for people out there who know about the New World Order and who know about the system of think tanks and foundations that have been set up to fund charitable organizations that are essentially fake? You know, they do a good job. You can't just walk around doing a horrible job or no one will believe you anymore. But that, you know, that do a decent job in some aspects, but then completely ignore some of the most important developments related to their causes. Big cancer. You know, where are they when it comes to the naked body scanners? The American Cancer Society, the Canadian Cancer Society, cancer.ca. That says 40% of women and 40% of guys are expected to die from cancer, according to 2009 studies here in Canada. Where are they when it comes to the investigating the possible radiation from body scanners, naked body scanners at the airports in Canada and in the United States? And is there a way for us to expose them for what they are and to force them to do a better job, or to change people's minds about them and about, you know, bigger and bigger chunks of the system, so they can get a more trustworthy information sources and make better decisions when it comes to choosing our politicians, petitioning them for redress or change, and staying on top of it so we make sure we get it? Are these things possible, and is this a conversation that we want to have? Because that's ultimately going to be key to determining our survival in this giant eugenics experiment. And bisphenol A. Dr. Mercola and Alex Jones talked about bisphenol A being everywhere. It's in the receipts we get. It's in American dollar bills. It's in tons of types of plastics. It's in the liners of tin cans. And it's just been put everywhere. And it's feminizing guys. And it's hyper-feminizing women. It's making them more aggressive. It's making them hit puberty earlier. Whereas with guys, it's turning more of us gay, whether we should be or not. And it's making even more straight guys more effeminate as part of a larger plan to take us out of the game. So if more guys know about this, will they resist that? Is it too late for them to resist that? How many people do we have to reach to find the guys that are able to resist that? You know, are there guys out there who hear about, guys are being turned into girls. And it's all because, you know, the New World Order, the forces behind globalization, know that if guys don't fight back, it's highly unlikely any other group of people on Earth will. Let's just say we are up against the CIA, private military contractors, think tanks, foundations, armies, other intelligence agencies, secret societies, evil multinational corporations. Let's just say we're up against all of these. Are we really going to let women, children, and old people try and take them on instead of us as guys? Is that a rational thought on our minds?
The reason why you're much sweeter, goodness knows, honeysuckle rose. Don't buy sugar, you just have to touch my cup. You're my sugar, it's sweet when you stir it up. When I'm taking sips from your tasty lips, seems the honey fairly drips. Your confection, goodness knows, and you're my honey, honeysuckle rose. Every honeybee fills with jealousy when they see you out with me.
Because I'll tell you what's going to happen, and what's already happening now in the UK with Common Purpose. Common Purpose is an organization out there that's designed to infiltrate local communities and set up local community organizing that's run by the government. And so they'll be promoting things like austerity, everybody using less as a result of climate change, and so on. This is an article from The Guardian UK, because England is about 2 years ahead of us here in North America in terms of their social engineering. Residents in 9 areas to help determine local spending. Quote, participatory budgeting experiment aims to broaden local decision making. People living in nine areas of England are to get the chance to influence local authority spending decisions under a, quote, participatory budgeting experiment. Authorities ranging in size from big city councils in Liverpool and Sheffield to Dulverton Town Council in Somerset have been selected to take part in the experiment, which aims to develop new ways to involve local residents in decision-making. It was developed in Porto Alegre, Brazil, and its most successful is characterized by the involvement of a broad base of local people and a substantial budget over a significant period of time. And what they'll do is they'll take people with the most mainstream understanding of our culture, and they will empower them through these organizations, and then they will claim local mandates for their policies to police us. You know, there's talk of a mandatory vaccine or a national vaccine registry here in Canada, just like they've been talking about it in the United States, to make sure all of us get our immunizations. And things like this will be enforced locally through these groups that are set up. And there's something called the Delphi technique, which basically involves a couple of people in the room helping to manage the conversation, including a skilled facilitator at the front. So we're, you know, we've been raised to be children here in Communist Canada, in the New World Order's kindergarten of Communist Canada, where we're covered up a little bit right now and we're cold, so we're a little sober and hopefully thinking straight and can figure out ways to plan to get active in the info war in 2011. But we'll be sitting in little council meetings like children. We'll want to say the right answer. The facilitator will be working on that. And then there'll be people strategically positioned to the left, on the far left, on the far right, in the front and in the back, and each of them will be some of the most forceful voices in the meeting, and they will support each other, and they will get all of us turning our heads to look left, right, forward, and back at what they say, and to see all of us looking at them and apparently sort of tacitly agreeing, and then we'll think that's the prevailing wisdom, and we'll go along with that, and that's, you know, an oversimplification of the Delphi technique. It's just people, it's how they manage different community meetings. I've seen the Delphi techniques. I've even disrupted the Delphi technique at a meeting, this past summer. I think it was this past summer. I think it was last year. Anyway, I remember doing that clearly because I saw it working. I got there at the meeting and I was there for like 10, 15 minutes. I was like, oh, okay, I see how this is working. And I'd see the conversation being carried on by those guys. So I went up right in the front. I sat up right next to one of the agitators and I helped disrupt the information flow that was keeping everyone transfixed. But that's the point of just sort of assuming things will get better, is that there will be people out there making big moves to organize people who feel a little bit destabilized by what's going on. Even on the Joe Rogan sort of Joe Everyman podcast, he's like, everybody has figured out something's going on. Like, no one's like, all this technology and all this change and all this globalization and economic turmoil is just going to stop, and we're all going to go back and go fishing. Something's going to come out of this. The question is, what? And an idea of how they're screwing with us Canadians here, because this is something that we hear happening about in the United States, and we always assume, in the U.S., you know, they got the racism there, and they got the crazy war on terror policies. Well, thanks in part to the North American Union, and there was an article in the Calgary Herald the other day talking about renewed talks between Obama and Harper to create a common North American security and trade perimeter. So, you know, they're passing it all behind the scenes. They're just not telling us that we're forming an EU-like federation here. Go see the movie United We Fall at Press FOR Truth, press4truth.ca for more on that. Featuring yours truly, I am in the film as one of the anti-globalization experts interviewed. Did a pretty damn good job in that film as well, and there's still ideas there that we can use today. But most importantly, you'll understand what's going on in terms of the harmonization of our policies. You can look at the HST, the harmonization sales tax, harmonized sales tax. It's all part of the idea of harmonizing everything, standardizing everything throughout North America and eventually throughout the world. Well, part of that is the terror laws. And you may have heard about the terror attack in Sweden. Swedes horrified by what may be first suicide bombing in history of immigrant-friendly nation. Well, the original headline on that was, officials condemn, quote, terrorist attack in Sweden, email threat received before the two explosions. So there you go. But here in Canada, as they bring back terror, and I do believe, you know, I'll check out the Swedish article if you don't know about this. Two blasts that shook a busy shopping street in central Stockholm were an act of terrorism, officials said Sunday. If confirmed as a suicide bombing, it would be the first attack in the Nordic country. And if you add this to the plans in America and elsewhere in the world to roll out more and more security measures at malls, at movie theaters, at sporting events, everywhere, similar to the ones in the airport, including in England, armed SAS, Special Air Services, sort of paramilitary Delta Force-style soldiers, were patrolling malls this Christmas because of potential heightened terror risk. And they're trained to shoot to kill, and they form a menacing presence. And thanks to movies and video games and so on, and the general war on terror concept, which can be destroyed by 9/11 truth, this sort of thing is still going on. And here in Canada, Montrealer on terror list decries Harper government's, quote, racist policies. A Montreal man, this is from Canadian Press from Saturday, a Montreal man who was put on the UN's terror watch list in 2006 but never charged with a crime is continuing to take his case to the streets. Abu Sufyan Abdel Razik said about 100 supporters marched through downtown Montreal on Saturday to press for an end to the sanctions imposed on him since his arrest. Now keep in mind, this is a Montreal man who was put on the UN's terror watch list in 2006 and still hasn't been able to get off, even though he's here in Canada. So the UN has terror watch lists meant to trap even Canadians. He was arrested but not charged during a 2003 visit to Sudan to see his ill mother. He was finally cleared to return to Canada last summer after 6 years in Sudan, which included two stints in prison and 14 months in the lobby of a Canadian embassy. Unable to work because of the sanctions, Abdel Razik has been in limbo since coming home. He said he's been unfairly targeted by what he calls the Harper government's, quote, racist policies. Quote, I did nothing wrong, he told reporters before the march. One morning, I find myself in this situation without any kind of charges, without any kind of evidence. Under a UN Security Council resolution, Ottawa has the power to punish anyone who provides Abdel Razik with material support. Even if he got a paycheck, he couldn't withdraw funds from his bank account. After a court battle, he won an injunction that allowed him limited monthly withdrawals from his credit union account. Both CSIS and the RCMP have acknowledged they have no evidence against Abdel Razik, who's exonerated of any ties to Al-Qaeda by the Sudanese Justice Department in 2005. So the UN's got nothing on him, the Canucks got nothing on him, and yet efforts to have his name removed from the list have been unsuccessful. The federal government and other authorities have continued to apply the sanctions. This is happening here in Canada, and there have been people detained on terror certificates. And there are fabulous flights to rendition camps in Eastern Europe that were taken off from Newfoundland. And so in the face of all this, what are we actually supposed to do? And what can we do about this? Well, here's something that I've noticed. We don't want to threaten our immediate relationships. We don't want to threaten our family, our relationships with our family, our friends, our coworkers, and so on. However, just putting information out there outside of that construct is something that you can do. Commenting on message boards, using initials. I see a lot of articles out there, where New World Order globalist ideas are reinforced. And in some cases, there's a lot of comments. In other cases, there aren't. You can make that more habitual. Calling into talk radio. Passing on. Having a pseudonym. A lot of times, people get power from pseudonyms that they choose. You know, you can meet some cute, sweet, little, mousy girl, you know, with glasses, all nerdy and sweet, and then you see her email address is supersexyboo, you know, 82 at hotmail.com. And she's expressing a part of herself that she normally doesn't feel she's capable of expressing through that email address. So you can take on a pseudonym just like people do for video game characters and so on, and you can use that to help spread information, especially online. But ultimately, what we have to do is I think we have to make clear to more people what the problem is. The problem is that it is difficult for us to talk about these things with other people that speak the same language and that have basically the same shared reality, minus different propaganda or counter-propaganda influences on it. And you'll get things like this that appeal to them. It says analysis, climate talks, 18 years, too little action. Again, from Yahoo News. I was born in 1992. You've been negotiating all my life. You cannot tell us that you need more time. Christina Oro of the Solomon Islands complained to delegates at UN talks on fixing global warming. This is from a recent report on the talks in Cancun, Mexico, for a new agreement on climate change. Her line, this little girl who was born in 1992, from a brief riveting speech to a 2009 climate summit in Copenhagen, was emblazoned on activist t-shirts at the latest UN talks in Mexico, expressing exasperation at small steps meant to slow floods, droughts, heat waves, and rising sea levels. The two-week 190-nation conference in Cancun, a Caribbean resort, agreed on Saturday to step up action against climate change, including a goal of $100 billion a year to help the poor from 2020 and action to protect carbon-absorbing rainforests. And you'll get people that are moved by polar bears and these simple little slogans. You know, I saw people at the breast cancer runs carrying, you know, part of the Boob Brigade Foundation and Save Our Breasts and just the simplest explanations for what they're doing to make them feel happy. And so in the face of all that, we have a fairly large job when it comes to putting out information that can challenge this reality. And we have to get better and better at it. We have to practice at it. You know, if you just talk about this once in a while, then you're going to get worse and worse at it, because those once in a while examples are going to be fewer and far between. I'll give you an example of something else that's happening with respect to the internet. Breaking news: WikiLeaks hacktivist shut down Amazon's European websites. It says here, update. There's an update here from Paul Joseph Watson. The websites have just come back online. The downtime was a good 2 hours. Twitter is still raging on the issue. And so you might be cheering on the hackers who are fighting on behalf of Julian Assange. And yet, I believe the whole WikiLeaks thing is an intelligence operation, and I believe that it normalizes certain precedents. Like, without a court order, Amazon cut off his services. PayPal and Visa cut off his services. His bank restricted his access to his bank account. And so by normalizing these things as a response to whistleblowers or people that are sharing information about criminal governments, it gets us all used to that and to that happening to anybody and being okay with that. So, for example, if I say in the next week or two, man, the government just cut off my access to my PayPal account. They won't let me access my bank account. You know, they won't let me use Amazon.com, or if not the government. The government put pressure on these companies to crack down on people like myself. Thanks to the publication of this in our mainstream media and us getting used to it, people might just say to me, well, yeah, it happens. Yeah, that's what happens to people who talk about the government. We know that. We're smart. We get it. and that's what this is in part meant to do. So got to be careful about that. You can even see how predictive programming is used in gas prices right now. You know, gas went up to $1.11, dropped back down to $1.08. You know, so we were breathing a sigh of relief. Now it's back to $1.11, and it's going to head for $1.15. And then before it hits $1.15, it'll have a couple more up down spikes. But gas prices are heading up higher as the value of barrels of oil is increasing, as part of the larger austerity plans to cripple us financially. Article here from Infowars.com here on tax-exempt foundations and think tanks, the process of invisible power, from Daniel Taylor at Old Thinker News. And this is exceptionally important to understand the fake reality and the fake responses to all the problems. You see how many, there's over 200 groups working on poverty issues in Toronto. I remember a couple of years ago, I went to an anti-poverty rally they held at Queen's Park, and I saw all the 200 different groups there. And then I saw, you know, I heard the little talk, which basically referenced a lot of the mainstream media and said we need a higher percentage than we're getting in terms of money for poverty. And then I realized, where are these people any other time of the year? Do these, you know, 1,000 or so people just show up once a year to an activist event and kind of talk a little mess to their followers and then go home? Is that how they survive? Is that their attack on the crucial issue of poverty in this city? And so I'm gonna mention here this quote from Meyer Kutz Meyer Kutz Rockefeller. Philanthropy is the essential element in the making of a Rockefeller power. It gives the Rockefellers a priceless reputation as public benefactors, which the public values so highly that power over public affairs is placed in the Rockefellers' hands. Philanthropy generates more power than wealth alone can provide. So do keep in mind the hidden influence of tax-exempt foundations out there. Excellent video with Norman Dodd, The Hidden Agenda with Norman Dodd, interviewed by G. Edward Griffin. That's Norman, D-O-D-D, which I strongly recommend you check out. It's about 51 minutes that explains all this. And, of course, in 1953, the Congressional Reese Committee found the influence of tax-exempt foundations. So the bottom line is, We gotta do more discussing about these things. We gotta work on the science of how to communicate with other people around us. If we don't do that, we won't be able to figure out better ways. You know, we might be fundamentally good as people, but if we got a job, when it came to marketing a product, we would wanna, you know, do more work on it, figure it out, and make some money off it. Well, when it comes to survival against the New World Order, we can take the same attitude. So before I go and give you over to Mr. David James, for 4 hours of sweet, sweet jazz, only as only he can spin it quite brilliantly. I will shout out a couple of websites where you can learn more. Mercola.com, M-E-R-C-O-L-A.com for excellent health information. Naturalnews.com for more excellent health information. Passing on health info is a phenomenal idea at this time. It's cold and flu season, so you know, just make it logical to share ways to protect people against being taken out and taking time off work. Due to colds and flus by passing on info from Mercola.com and naturalnews.com. Infowars.com for the big picture, the globalist agenda. HenryMAKOW.com for amazing essays on culture and our culture creation industry. VigilantCitizen.com for the same. VRAN.org for vaccine exemption forms. FluorideAlert.org for info on fluoride. Enough of us know about fluoride water filters to push our politicians to get out of our water supply. It's a no-brainer at this point. Just logically, we just need the push of that idea in our culture. Locally, TorontoTruthSeekers.com, PressForTruth.ca, ConspiracyCulture.com, book and DVD store, and the Toronto Street News, Victor Fletcher's paper. Again, flip a homeless guy a toonie, get some of this info, and do pass it on. We are in an info war, folks. It is Monday of this week. Let's try and break out a little info that people, that you think people need to know. Try and re-engage with people. If they have kids, recommend stuff for their kids. If they have parents, recommend stuff for their parents. If they have financial interests, recommend buying silver because that is on its way up. With $16 a month in September, it is now over 30. And so on and so forth. There's a million things out there. And as we get more atomized in our culture, finding information that shows we care about each other and then passing it on will be a key towards doing that. And find some old school heroes. You know, Bob Marley didn't just say, oh, I want to be famous so bad, like a lot of the new young TV reality star and American Idol style heroes do. Go back to Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Bob Marley, Bob Dylan. Go back to a few years ago when people appeared to be at least more sincere to get some of that attitude, and then take some of the massive amount of information that we have access to here in the 21st century and pass it on. That's my advice. It's your host, BK, a.k.a. VJ, here for Monday morning's Rude Awakening. I am out of here. Have a fantastic Monday. It's cold out there. Take care of yourselves, and peace out. ¶¶